flundran byrgir.
Já.
Þetta er fiskur sem að maður fór að taka eftir alltaf meira og meira fyrir nokkrum árum séðan.
Já, en... ekkert eitthvað allir glaðið með það, sko.
Já, veistu mikið flundru?
Nei, ég veit nokkrar. Maður var alltaf í svo grár köttur alltaf í hraunsfyrri. Maður er yngri, sko, það er nógu að þar.
En flundran er svona nýjasti hérna, sportfiskurinn okkar, fyrir utan kannski núðlagsinn sem við erum nú eftir að sjá meira af.
Er þetta sportfiskur?
Já, það er svo bara spurning. Við vitum ekki alveg hvar staður flundrunir er innan bæði hobbysins og svo náttúrulega líka bara innan lífkerfisins.
Já.
En það sem við vitum ekki neitt um flundru, þá fengum við hana Terísu Henke til að koma til okkar og segja okkur allt sem þú þarf að vita um flundru og svo fórum við nú aðeins líka út í hérna...
Núðlagsævindýri,
það sem að, já, hún er svona sérfræðingur í hérna, hvað kallar þetta, invasive species.
Já.
Og hérna, endilega ef þið veiðið flundru og við etjum nú í keppni 60 cm flundruklubburinn.
Já, hvað er þetta, fá ekki box frá okkur?
Jó, vorum búin að lofa flugubóks, allir þeim sem mann á að veiða sannlega 60 cm flundru, þannig að ef þið veiðið svo stóra flundru, endilega sendið okkur mynd og við Birkir skuldum ykkur flugur. En endilega tóki við og hérna fræðist meir flunduruna. Þetta er mjög forunilegt og gott starf sem hún Terísa er að vinna hendi við að rannsaka flunduruna og landnám hennar og áhrif í líkiðinni ykkur.
Já, þetta er einhvernig svona stærra mingi og maður vissi bara ekkert þetta.
Nei, þetta er forunilegt. Þetta er forunilegra en ég þorða vona.
Bara miklu, sko. Bara njótið.
Terísa, take it away. Terísa, welcome to Hillurinn.
Thank you.
What do I pronounce it? Teresa?
Teresa, já.
Teresa, okay. I'm sorry for that. So you are a German biologist who somehow ended up in Ísafjörður and ended up researching flounder. How does such a thing happen?
Pretty randomly. I was looking for a place to study my master's degree and was stuck in a German train when Facebook recommended the master's degree in Ísafjörður. And a year later I moved to Iceland, planning to stay a year, and now it's been 6.5.
That's, Ísafjörður, I guess Facebook ads do work, but Ísafjörður is, there's one thing moving to Iceland in the winter time, and then there's a completely another level moving to Ísafjörður. how was it for you arriving in Ísafjörður then?
I really liked it from the beginning. I arrived at the end of July in 2016.
And that's a good time to be there.
Yes. But I even enjoy the winters to most extent at least.
Okay.
And it has become home.
Okay, and what is this? I hesitate to call it obsession, because, it is your job, your study field. But how and why the flounder?
It kind of has become my obsession, I guess. I heard about a project being planned by my supervisor. And, I contacted her, and we set up a project for my master's thesis, and then I didn't want to stop.
Okay, so some interesting results. And so why and how did the flounder come to Iceland? Let's start at the very beginning. When did the flounder first come?
So the first flounder was officially caught and documented by Hafro in 1999. It was caught in Ölfusau at the river mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And since then has spread around most of the country. And we now know that it most likely arrived from the Faroe Islands based on some of my research, but we are still unsure of how exactly it arrived.
Okay, how do we know a flounder is a Faroe Island is flounder or not a Norwegian one or Danish?
Fair question. Back in 2007, one of my supervisors from my PhD now had published a paper, and they took samples from different flounder populations throughout Europe, including the Faroe Islands, and they compared it genetically. And they were able to tell that there's a genetic difference between the Faroe Island flounder and the rest of Europe. And we knew that there were two kind of hypotheses out. The first one was that they derived via ballast water from the North Sea, thinking of the Netherlands, because at that time a lot of volcanic ash was transported to the Faroe Island, to the Netherlands,
mm-hmm.
and so it could have come back with ballast water.
Yeah.
But then later on, the hypothesis came up that it could have arrived from the Faroe Islands, and so this was perfect for us. We went around Iceland collecting samples all around, And we did the same analysis and then compared it to the data that was collected back in 2007. And based on that, we could tell that the flounder is genetically closer to the Faroe Islands than to the European populations.
Okay, that's very interesting. And then that leaves us with the question of, you mentioned ballast water, but how did they get here and why did they get here?
Why is always a good question. Yeah. Yeah, we're not entirely sure. Like, we now know where it came from, but this opens up the question of how, because the Faroe Islands are so close. So there is a lot of boat traffic between the countries. I know of some fishermen that, or like some fishing boats that fish for flatfish close towards the Faroe Islands. So there are some ways, but it's also possible that they came here naturally using some currents. But the surface currents between Iceland and the Faroe Islands are going towards the Faroe Islands, but I'm not entirely sure how the other currents are set up. So there are possibilities of both.
And so they're not strong enough swimmers just to swim here? Or?
I'm not sure. Based on literature, I know that they can move, I think, up to 30, 40 kilometers per year. But usually their movement is between like local feeding grounds and spawning grounds. So I'm not sure. Or if the larvae got into currents that swept them off to Iceland, there are lots of possibilities. And
so they do they have their larval stage in the ocean and could mm-hmm. theoretically easily be pumped into ballasts. And
yes. Then, yeah. So the flounder spawns in the marine habitat, so in the ocean, and the eggs are then floating on the surface and then eventually sink down. And after the spawning, currents are used for the larvae to go into estuaries and freshwater, where they eventually settle and then become like the form of flatfish and then stay there. So that could have happened, that they also got swept off naturally or again, yeah, in the ballast water.
So it's a sort of a reverse life cycle of what we have with our freshwater fish here, where
yes.
they feed in the ocean and spawn in freshwater, flounder feed in freshwater and use the ocean to spawn.
Yes.
That's interesting. So, what about, because we've been seeing some new species, you know, some crabs that are believed to have come by ballast water. And we're seeing something like mackerel, which just comes because of presumably warmer waters. So that is obviously the question raised, that the flounder was here. And before I spoke to you, that was the reason I thought it was here, because just the water is getting warmer and it's getting habitable for other marine creatures.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if this comes by ballast water, it maybe should have come 50, 70 years ago, but just the habitat didn't support a flounder population, or?
Yeah, exactly that. It's, in general, with invasive species, they often talk about the tens rule, like there are hundreds of species on the move daily. It's very connected to human movement. But of all the species that are out there, only like about 10% make it to the new habitat. And even those who all arrive, only about 10% actually survive because of the environment being favorable for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it might have been that the flounder has been coming here earlier, but it never really got the support from the ecosystem, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually it just worked out.
And I mean, you mentioned in our talk before we started recording that you were able to follow them, or sort of when they started in 1999 in Ölfusá, they went clockwise around the country, which very much follows sort of the warmer parts of the country, and then it closes on the east coast, with there being a gap in the northeast.
Yeah, so from what we've been seeing, based on some of the documentation, the first one was caught in Ölfusá, and about a year later, one was caught in Höpp. And from these two points, yeah, it spread clockwise around the country very fast. So within a few years, it had reached, especially Hrynsfjörður in Snæfellsnes, the Westfjords eventually, and I think it's caught as far up as Eyjafjörður, Húsavík. And then it's slowly making its way up on the east coast as well, kind of hopping from one fjord to another. And yeah, it leaves just the northeast corner. Just a question of whether it's because of the environment there or if it's just a question of time until they reach it.
And also maybe it's not a very populated corner of the country, not many fishermen around. And
exactly,
maybe
they're
hiding there. So if somebody catches a flounder on the northeast, they should definitely contact you.
Yes, please.
But we're talking about ballast versus if they swam here. Obviously, you also pointed it out to me that this may be an important point, whether the flounder is just a part of a changing and developing ecosystem or an invasive species due to man's actions.
Yeah, when it comes to defining the status of an invasive species, the flounder is currently classified here in Iceland as potentially invasive. But these definitions are often well discussed or hotly discussed, but often depend on how a species got introduced, whether it was based on human interaction or if it came naturally. And with the flounder, we just don't know, and both possibilities are there. And at this stage, I would hesitate to exclude any of them. So it becomes a question of how we should go forward. Should we ignore that it could be potentially invasive because it could have come naturally? Or, yeah, but this is without the scope of my, it's not within the scope of my PhD to answer that. So I've been very curious in asking people what they think about it, both scientists working with invasive species, what they think based on the knowledge that we have. But I'm also very curious to hear what people in Iceland think about this, if that makes a difference for them, whether the flounder could have come naturally or not.
Mm-hmm. Now, with climate getting warmer, we're seeing Arctic char populations sort of sliding down and the flounder sort of occupying the same area. Would you consider these species potentially competing for that place in the ecosystem?
I think to some extent there is the possibility of competition based on them feeding on similar things and being in the same, like using the same habitats around the same time. But I don't think the competition right now is that high that it will that it has a big impact. Mm-hmm. There have been a couple of master theses that looked at the competition between them, and it has been shown that flounder can eat small or juvenile salmonids. Mm-hmm. Same with my master thesis showing that they can eat small skarkoli.
Okay.
So there is the potential for it. But at this stage, we don't know enough. There hasn't been enough research to really put a finger on the extent of the competition or the effects of the flounder.
And even if the competition would be more towards maybe skarkoli or rispretta than the char.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. We just don't know.
Okay, so they spawn in the ocean, so they do most of their growing in freshwater. And you mentioned they eat salmonids, but they must just eat everything, I assume, to survive.
Yes. During my master thesis, I looked at the diet of the flounder, especially of the smaller ones. And I saw everything from small copepods to amphipodes, small skarkoli, but they nibble on the siphons of bivalves, so like mussels and such, they kind of stick out to breathe and feed, and the flounder just comes along and nibbles those off. And they kind of eat anything.
When you go to a system that has a lot of them, especially the juvenile, it can be almost like a carpet on the bottom. You can't help think, but they must eat everything living on that bottom.
Yeah, when you see these amounts sometimes, it feels like that at least.
Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, food is always a limiting factor in every ecosystem, so they must be competing with something.
Yes.
Well, the biomass in flounder is not going to be in char.
No.
it's interesting. But they are obviously very sought after in Europe as not necessarily sport fish, but just because they are good to eat. You researched the sort of what people in Iceland think about the flounder and what were the results there compared to elsewhere in Europe.
So here in Iceland, people hate the flounder. Let's put that to the point. I base it mostly off of four questions, whether people think it could be an important recreational fish species here in Iceland, mm-hmm. whether people think it has a negative impact on their personal fishing experience, whether they think flounder has a negative impact on other species, and whether they consider the flounder a plague. And yeah, in Iceland, it's very negative. People don't think it could be important for fishing, but think it has a negative impact on their own experience on other species, and yeah, overall, a plague. And I repeated that same survey among anglers throughout Europe, so where the flounder occurs naturally, in Germany, Denmark, Norway, and that's a complete opposite. Mm-hmm. People go out specifically to catch the flounder. There are competitions around it. And a response I often got was, why are you even asking us these questions? Why would we even think the flounder is a plague? Like, it's a great fish. So it's very...
But I mean, then in those places, they are part of an ecosystem which sort of is balanced with the flounder as a factor in the equation. Do we see sort of the flounder having predators here in Iceland? I've personally seen a photo of a cormorant trying to swallow a big flounder. It's quite comical, almost.
I've seen that as well. there have actually been some issues where other birds who had a shortage of other food sources have been feeding on small flatfish and kind of died because the flatfish was thick and got stuck in the airways.
Yeah.
But there's some predators when they're small, especially some like shrimps. And in Europe, there are some jellyfish species mm-hmm. that can eat them. But here in Iceland, I think it's very limited, especially once they pass a certain size, then it's...
Nothing threatens a flounder.
Exactly.
Maybe a mink or something, which is also Maybe. Invasive. But yeah, I could see something like a big wading bird or something picking them off the bottom, but obviously we don't have them here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or at least not enough.
No, at least not enough. But when we speak of invasive species, obviously it's how they got here and all that, but also I don't know if it's factored in, if they have like a detrimental effect on the existing ecosystem. That's a big part of that, or is that just completely separate?
So what you're working with in terms of definitions is when a species arrives and is here as a new species and was introduced to humans, you usually refer to it as a non-native species. But then if that species ends up spreading very fast and has a net negative impact on whether it's the ecosystem, economic factors, social factors, then it's considered invasive.
Mm-hmm.
So only when it has a negative impact.
Okay. We have tried. I mean, I think most fishermen are familiar with little structure in Hlíðarvatn to try to limit the amount of flounder, at least they can reach the Hlíðarvatn. Do these things work? And are they sort of important? Are we really fighting the flounder, or are we fighting windmills, so to speak?
There have been definitely some tries, like Hlíðarvatn, North Andakílsá, and other places. Some have worked better than others. I think in Andakílsá, it didn't work at all. To keep the flounder out. I think they're the only factor that stops them is the massive rock wall eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But some places have worked. I'm currently doing some research up in the Westfjords in Åsau, in Bolungarvik, where we wanted to look at how the flounder uses different aquatic habitats using acoustic telemetry. So we tagged them to kind of follow their movement throughout the river, and to see whether how it moves between the ocean, the river, and the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the river, they had put up barriers back in the 70s or 80s. And so we became interested if these barriers keep the flounder actually out. And I've tagged 20 flounder, and none of them actually made it into the lake. Okay. But one of them tried very hard to come past the first barrier. We have one receiver just below the barrier and one above. And within, I think, about an hour, one flounder kept trying to come past. It made it just far enough above the barrier to be picked up by the receiver above, but then kept being flushed out again, tried about four or five times, and eventually gave up.
But that tells us that given some water levels and situations or even individuals must be able to pass those barriers.
Yes, I think the chances are there that if it's a particularly strong flounder or if the conditions are just right, that some of them can make it.
But in their sort of natural habitats, do they occupy just the lower sort of estuary places of the river, or do they travel far inland if possible? Obviously, they can't cross obstacles, or I don't know even how they do in very fast current. Maybe you can tell us that. But or are they trying to get into lakes? What is sort of their dream habitat for a flounder?
That is a good question, and I can't really answer that to what their dream habitat is, but they are known to travel quite far up in some rivers and reach some of the lakes, but in other rivers that they don't go up as far. So they can be anywhere.
Okay. That's interesting. But can you tell us also a little bit about the way they move? You mentioned that you had recorded flounders going freshwater, saltwater, freshwater, mm-hmm. so they don't need to like smolt or anything to travel from freshwater to seawater. But are they constantly in this going to the ocean, coming back to fresh, or what's sort of their, and what time of year do they leave the freshwater to spawn and sort of part of their life cycle?
So what I can tell from my results so far, it's all very preliminary. But out of those 20 flounder, I think we have about half of them that kind of stay in the river and just move up and down a little bit. But then others, they leave the river completely and then just kind of do short dips into the river, swim up and then down and leave again. So they don't need any smolting or anything to change. They can adapt easily to the different salinities. And when it comes to movement throughout the year, what is known from Europe is that around the end of the year, beginning of the year, they move into deeper waters for spawning. Mm-hmm. And then the spawning happens between March to June, around that time. But we're not entirely sure how it is here in Iceland because it's a different habitat, so it could be different. But we also are currently looking into that, hoping to catch this this spawning migration. Mm-hmm. We have a similar setup in Dýrafjörður up in the Westfjords, and there we have a system out that covers, or is going to cover about 2 years. And we have, I think, currently about 20 flounder tagged. And so next summer we're going to retrieve the data, and hopefully we can catch this movement outside, out of the fjord. Because we don't know much about where they spawn, when they spawn. And we're actually quite curious about the spawning grounds because we found, as part of the genetic work that we did to look at where it came from, we found some indications that there's also some hybridization going on between the flounder and the plaice.
Okay, that's very interesting.
It's very common in the Baltic Sea, North Sea, so where they naturally co-occur. But it seems to be happening here as well. With the methods we've been using, we can't say for sure to what extent it's going on, but we can tell that there's something going on.
But are these flundra skarkoli hybrids, are they sort of able to reproduce themselves, or are they full unfertile hybrids?
I think often they can't reproduce. And that has been some concern in Europe, that they often look closer to plaice than they do to flounder. So it could be an issue for looking at plaice stocks. But the research on it has also been very limited. So I'm not entirely sure to what extent it would have an impact.
I mean, it appears quite obvious because we have such few freshwater species here in Iceland. We don't have all the variety. You only have to go to Scandinavia to find a much vaster variety of species, that something should occupy that brackish water between the salt and the fresh, and now the flounder is kind of filling that void, maybe.
Yeah, moved in.
It's moved in. So when you look at the fish we are familiar with, the salmon and the char and the trout, they sort of have their, each river has a stock, you know, and they, even if they venture to sea, they come back.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously with the, or maybe not obviously, but if the flounder lays its eggs and it has that larval stage where it floats, it must just go randomly wherever they land up, seek out fresh water. It's not like you have the Dýrafjörður flounder population or...
Mm-hmm.
Well, am I right in assuming that?
To some extent, yes. That would... Where the larvae ends up, I think... heavily depends on the currents that they use from the spawning grounds. So depending on where they spawn.
Mm-hmm.
But adult flounder are known to be quite site specific, so they return to the same sites.
Okay.
And we've actually been able to somewhat confirm it here in Iceland as well. Up in Dýrafjörður, I tagged the first flounder in 2021. And so the way I'm tagging, like with other fish, my colleagues are tagging cod and saithe and salmonids as well up there. So they tag them internally. But flounder being the flatfish that it is, I can't put the tag inside because there's not enough room. So I've been tagging them externally, just kind of fastening the tag on wire that goes through the muscles and then is then fastened.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2022, so last summer, we caught some of the fish that we had tagged the previous year. And so it seems that they just stay in the same area and use the same area.
Okay, even if they leave for spawning, they come back to the... it's very interesting.
It's very cool. It was good to know that also, yeah, everything, it's working. And they're very healthy. They grew with despite the tag. So this has been a very good sight.
Nice. So they do spawn multiple times. So how long is a flounder's life cycle and how many times do they spawn?
Oh, that's a good question of how many. I'm not entirely sure. They can grow quite old and spawn several times.
Yeah, I mean, we see obviously a lot and lot of the small ones where they exist.
Yeah.
And judging by the speed they distributed through Iceland, they must be quite productive breeders.
Yes.
it's an interesting fish, Birgir. Yeah. We have on our hands here, the flounder.
Flundranvæður. Yeah, we were talking about before, what's the biggest one that you've seen and like how big can they grow?
It's said that they can grow up to like 60 centimeters, but usually between 30 and 40. I think the biggest one I caught was around 47 centimeters. And what I've noticed is that in the estuaries, I've been catching bigger ones than in rivers. So either just by luck or I'm not sure. But yeah, the biggest one was about 47 centimeters and quite
that's
thick.
That's a huge, that's a very large dinner plate.
Yes.
How heavy do you think that fish could be?
Oh, it's must have been about 700 gram, something like that. I just remember that it kind of crashed our scale that was up to 500.
Okay.
Okay.
It's dinner for two.
Well.
Yeah, it's interesting because often with these species, I have given way too much thought into eels, as so many do. It's a very interesting phenomenon, really. And if they... even bother going far up if they've reached sexual maturity or if they stay in the estuary after that or I will definitely be giving flounders more of thought.
Everybody should.
Yeah, it's an interesting fish. So with your research, obviously I think many of our listeners will have noticed your surveys on Facebook, sort of where that data comes from, that Icelanders hate flounder and all of that. What can fishermen that run across flounder do to contribute to your research?
Definitely, like, let me know. Also, please eat the flounder.
Yeah.
If you can.
Your survey is you had recently a new survey, and I assume well, I at least encourage you to keep annoying fishermen with your surveys. It's quite interesting, and I think everyone is just happy that someone is looking into learning more about it. And also, I mean, if somebody catches that famous northeast flounder,
there would be a prize.
No. Yeah, to find you, Teresa Henke, on Facebook, and send you a picture, potentially the body or the carcass of the famous northeast flounder.
Yes, please.
Birgir, we will catch one this summer in Vopnafjörður.
What will be the grand slam then? Flounder, pink salmon, salmon, char, sea trout, brown trout.
Yes, we have a new Icelandic grand slam, including the flounder and the pink salmon.
Oof. Oh, yeah. I hope it kind of never happens, but it will be interesting.
Yeah, it will be very interesting. But, yeah, we mentioned the pink salmon. I don't know if you've looked into that at all, but obviously it's also a complicated question if it's invasive or not invasive, because it arrives here naturally, but we are paying, the reason they're here are Stalin's decisions to move them to the White Sea 70, 80 years ago. So it's not often a clear-cut invasive or natural. So what do you think? I mean, that's also another example of where we need to look into if they're competing for resources.
Yeah, with the pink salmon, it is actually classified as invasive species in Europe. Mm-hmm. Because it was moved to the west of Russia and from there kind of spread on. And I think they were stalking the rivers until 1999 or sometime around that.
So late.
Mm-hmm, for quite a long time. And then it was well established already in Norway, mostly being up in the north. But then I think around 2017 something changed. And since then we've been seeing these growing numbers everywhere, not just in Norway where this kind of abundance has shifted. Mm-hmm. But in other countries, in the UK, in Iceland, you have noticed the increasing numbers every other year.
Every other year. That's also a very special thing with nature to have it every other year, that there's a stronger population on the odd year than there is on the flat. But, I mean, it looks like we are maybe 4 years behind Norway or two cycles or something in this. And the growth there has been just so exponential.
Yeah. I think I saw some numbers. I think in 2017 they had about 10,000 that they caught. And then in 2019 or 2021 it was already up to 200,000. So I'm very curious to see how this summer is going to play out in terms of pink salmon.
Yeah, I mean, they maybe not necessarily compete for resources so much because the smolts don't live in the river, mm-hmm. and they occupy a little bit, maybe similar spawning grounds to the char. And of course, they die off way before the salmon spawns, so theoretically they could just brush the gravel out. But, being in a nice salmon river, expensive, which means it has a lot of economical value, mm-hmm. and you have 2,000 Atlantic salmon and maybe 20,000 pink salmon, it's obviously going to be hard to call that Atlantic salmon fishing.
Yeah, there's there are some impacts that the pink salmon can have. Like you said, their life cycle is so different that the overlap is very short. Mm-hmm. But if in that short time thousands of pink salmon are there, that could be an issue, competing for the place or the food. Mm-hmm. But also when they are dying off after spawning, this can have unknown impacts, both positive and negative, because mm-hmm. you have this additional food source for not even just fish, but also birds or terrestrial animals. But then if it becomes too many nutrients, it could also become polluted. Mm-hmm. So there's this unknown factor. And like you said, it's a smaller one. So if you set out to catch this big salmon and then end up with a small pink salmon, probably not the greatest time.
But this is very interesting in what will happen, because you obviously you have a lot of, because most rivers in Iceland are rather deprived of nutrients. That's why there's salmon there that needs to go to the ocean to reach sexual maturity. If you start bringing all these nutrients in, which will, you know, bring greater, can you say, þörungar?
Algae.
Algae, yeah. Which leads to a greater bug life, which might lead to greater survival of brown trout versus salmon. That also could affect the balance of the ecosystem.
Yeah.
And then you have all these eggs feeding the, and all the dead fish feeding the resident fish. It's a multi-layered cake of potentially shit.
It's very well put.
It might be jam, but there is definitely some shit in there.
I'm just curious because we're talking about pink salmon now. I've seen pink salmon rivers being very aggressive towards other fish, especially just protecting their spawning grounds and et cetera. Have you seen any flounder being very aggressive towards other fish or like areas they want to keep to themselves? Or
Personally, I don't know. I can't base that off of my research or anything. But I've been seeing some videos and I've been hearing from people that say that they are quite a good fighter when it comes to angling. So I could see them being quite aggressive.
I have hooked once in my life a halibut on a rod. Never know how big it was or anything because it straightened out my hooks. But something so flat that sticks to the bottom and you're trying to pull it up, it felt like I was pulling the lid of a trash can or something because it takes on so much current as well. So, yeah, maybe we should look at the flounder as a potential sport fish.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything you would like to add, Teresa, to our flounder discussions?
No, if, I encourage people to take part in my survey.
Take part in her survey and if you have any information or
big or questions
contact Teresa and I would like to advertise for a 60 centimeter for a picture of a 60 centimeter flounder. Looks like a 16 inch pizza, but
yeah, they will get a flight box from Sigþór.
You will definitely have to contribute half of that.
What
should we say? 50 flies for whoever catches a 55 centimeter plus flounder?
60 or nothing.
60 flies for a 60 centimeter flounder.
Oh, yeah. I'm down with that.
Well, I like that.
Thank you, Teresa, for giving us insight on the flounder and the pink salmon and
thank
your
you
interesting
me.
Research.